Program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors. Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired. And when I knew I had to face another day,
you are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, enlighten you spiritually. Help me name it. I'm no longer doubtful of what I'm living for. And if I make you happy, I don't need to do more. Cause you make me feel. Many of us look at life as work. We approach it and try to handle it like a job. We complain about it. We blame others when it's not working. We hold someone else responsible when it does not give us what we want. Some of us give up on life. We move from day to day with no plan, no goals, and ultimately no rewards. We fail to understand that if life is work, the better we do it, the better it will pay us. When we perform our tasks to the very best of our ability, we receive just rewards for what we do. When we are thorough in our work and put our best into it, we become better at it. When we become too good for where we are, we will be advanced to our rightful place. The things we must realize about life is it cannot be better until we are better. We cannot get more until we are more. The only thing that can stop our advancement in life is our not being ready to move. If life is work, run it like a multi-million dollar corporation and elect yourself Chief Executive Officer. Affirmation. The better I am at life, the better it gets. That comes from the book Acts of Faith. Iyanla Vansant. Good evening. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis. And we're streaming online at kfai.org. And this is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman. And I'm Kinshasha. We're going to talk with Dr. David Simon. His book, Free to Love, Free to Heal, Heal Your Body by Healing Your Emotions. Doctor, how did this book come about?
In many ways, this book is the fruit of, you know, over 30 years of my work as a physician, in that, you know, my training as a conventional medical doctor was really to look at people as if they were bags of biochemicals. So when someone has a complaint, a symptom, a ticket that gets them into a doctor's office, the conventional physician is taught to think in terms of what biochemistry is out of balance, and then how do we recreate a new biochemistry by a pharmaceutical. So someone has heartburn, you don't think in terms of life stress, you think in terms of too many hydrochloric acid molecules. Someone has trouble sleeping, you're not thinking in terms of marital discord, you're thinking in terms of insufficient GABA. And if someone's depressed, the conventional training says it's not because your core relationships are not nourishing you, or you've had a history of boundary violations as a child. It's an insufficiency of serotonin. And, you know, what I've come to realize over really decades is that there's almost always a deeper story that underlies a challenge to our life and challenge to our health, either psychological or physical health. And that if we can get into that story, if we can tap into that story, if we can reveal that story that's almost always hidden in more subconscious levels of the mind, then that's the beginning of healing and transformation. And so really for, you know, the last decade, I've been exploring how do we make it safe enough for someone to awaken and access that story. And you know, that's led to courses that I've been teaching now for many years, and then ultimately to this book.
You know, when you're talking about stories, there's been kind of a core misunderstanding about them. There's seems to be one school of thought that says that we really need to get beyond our stories, and another school of thought that suggests that we need to tell our stories over and over again. And one of the challenges, I think, somewhere between the two is that, and I think that one would choose to get beyond the story because they don't want to be re-traumatized by whatever that initial trauma was. And I'm just wondering, in your work, how do you see that?
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. But if retelling a story re-traumatizes you, then that story is continuing to sabotage your happiness, whether or not you're bringing it into conscious awareness or not. You know, it's like if you think there's a boogeyman living in your closet, whether or not you open that closet door or not, that boogeyman is still scaring you. And so, you know, it's my experience that we need to open the closet. We need to bring those stories out more often than not, regardless of how painful or traumatizing they were at the time. Just because of the evolutionary nature of life, our ability to digest that experience becomes much greater with time. And so, you know, to say let's just get on with our lives, that's in many ways just saying let's just sweep it under the rug and pretend that it's not there. But inevitably, people will trip over that toxicity that's not been dealt with. So I do think the ultimate goal is to get on with it, to realize that whatever's happened in the past, we now at this moment have the capacity to start writing a new chapter, to, you know, creating a new screenplay for ourselves. But, you know, if someone is sensing that something from their past is no longer serving them in the present, telling them just get over it almost never really works. And, you know, if we could, it would be great. The closest thing we have to it is, you know, take some Prozac. But what we know is that as soon as you stop the Prozac, the underlying feelings return because you haven't done the deeper work of identifying, mobilizing, and clearing out that emotional toxicity.
In your work, have you found that there's one way that is more effective than another in being able to start to release these stories, to release these things that we've hidden on the inside?
you know, I think that there is a elegant process that addresses the core challenges that most people who are being restricted by emotional pain from the past can employ. Obviously, based upon a person's individual experience and their makeup, some will be more effective than others. But, you know, in general, the process that I find to be the most useful, which is why we use it at the Chopra Center and why I wrote the book about it, involves a certain level of withdrawing from your world, at least for a few days. You know, in the traditional yoga traditions, there's a step along the path known as pratyahara, which means withdrawing the senses from outside and going within. And, you know, it's sometimes hard to get free of emotional pain if you're in the world and still dealing with conflicted relationships. So, you know, there's a real value in saying, I'm going to take a few days off and get to a place where you're not being called upon to respond or react in the predictable ways. And then go within. You know, meditation is a key component of quieting down the inner dialogue and really listening to the conversation of the heart, which is always whispering. It's never shouting at us. You know, in that quiet space, withdrawing from the usual concerns and challenges of life, quieting down the mind in yoga practice and meditation, then centering in the heart, we begin the process by simply asking our hearts, you know, what am I carrying with me from my past that's no longer serving me in the present? I think it's, you know, the most important question to start this process of emotional purification, emotional detoxification. And then if you've prepared for it and have taken the time to quiet and give it the attention, then your heart will start to reveal. It'll tell you the stories and it will bring you the feelings. And you know, so what we usually do in our programs and what I recommend in the book is that you listen to it for a while, you feel it and you listen, and then you start writing about it. That journaling seems to have a very profound effect on taking this information that's buried deep within our soul and bringing it out to a place where we can now truly heal it. So there's a process of identifying what we're carrying with us. There's a process of mobilizing, and in my experience, the most powerful way to mobilize emotional toxicity is to share it with people that we trust. So that could be a therapist or a counselor or a clergy member or a dear friend or family member. It could be a professional person. You know, at the courses that we teach, the Free to Love courses that we teach, we have people pair up, and with total strangers in this very safe, loving, guided context, people will expose themselves in ways that they're not usually willing to express that vulnerability. But that mobilizes it. So rather than keeping it hidden deep within our heart and soul, we start talking about it. And there's tremendous value in talking about it, particularly if the people with whom we're sharing it are established in a state of non-judgment. One of the values is just in the process of mobilizing, we start to feel free. Another is that we realize that everybody has their own stories and that we're not alone, even though sometimes we may feel that we're the only ones who are going through this kind of pain. Because it's generally not something that's discussed in polite company. And then, so that's the second step. That's the third step. The first step is to prepare for it. So we prepare by meditation, by withdrawing from the usual worldly concerns, by doing yoga to get connected to our bodies. We identify by asking these questions and journaling the experiences that come into awareness. We mobilize by sharing our stories, and then we very consciously encourage people to go through a releasing ritual. You know, so what we do at our courses, we literally pack people on buses and take them down to the beach here in San Diego, and we have them gather up rocks along the shore, and as they're reviewing their stories in their mind and feeling the sensations in their body, we encourage them as a ritual to download all the pain into the rock that they're holding in their hand against their heart. And when that rock is fully loaded up, then we tell them to heave that rock into the ocean. Just throw it away with lots of vigorous sounds as a demonstration that we're not going to live without love anymore, that whatever's happened in the past, we can create a new future. And so we go through that process. It usually takes about an hour. And, you know, we should take before and after pictures, because the sense of lifting of a burden is so profound when people are willing to activate their minds and their bodies with the intention of releasing. So that's the fourth step. And then the fifth step is to begin now consciously writing the next chapter and making the commitments that whatever's happened in the past, moving forward, we will act as if we deserve happiness, as if we deserve love, as if we deserve to take good care of ourselves, as if we have a meaning and purpose in life that we deserve to express in the world. And we find that in a very short time, even if someone's been carrying pain for decades, that there's a real sense of light, of lightening, you know, of enlightening. The heart feels lighter. The creativity begins to flow again. The sense of being worthy and lovable is rekindled. So it doesn't take long, and then it allows us to really move on to that path of awakening.
We're talking with Dr. David Simon. Dr. Simon is the co-founder of the Chopra Center. His new book, Free to Love, Free to Heal. You talk about moving from healing to awakening. Can you talk about awakening, Dr. Simon?
Awakening is celebrating this extraordinarily mysterious, miraculous opportunity to see the world, see the universe through a human nervous system. You know, it's, you know, we take it for granted, but, you know, if we step back just for a moment and think about how improbable it is that we are even here for this short time, and what an amazing creation nature is, you know, with all of its abundance and its change and its diversity and its sounds and sensations and sights and tastes and smells, that, you know, to be wallowing in suffering is to be missing, you know, this amazing experience. And so we want people to dump the pain, you know, to unchain themselves from the weights that they're carrying with them, to release the emergency brake that they're driving with, so that they can really say, hey, life is amazing. Let's celebrate. Let's really enjoy it. Let's keep looking for the deeper meaning, the deeper truth. Let's come into this space with an open heart and an enthusiastic mind. And that's really, you know, what the spiritual path is. The spiritual path is increasingly embracing the miracle of existence. And, you know, so we don't want to waste that time. We don't want to spend the whole time agonizing, anguishing over things that have happened to us in the past, because then it'll be over with and all we'll be left with is regret. It's like people who go to a restaurant and after they order and have been eating for a while, one person says, you know, this is a really bad meal. The food is cold. It's not spiced very well. And the other one says, you're right, and the portions are so small. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of people live their life that way, that they're perpetually complaining about what's happening, but at the same time terrified that it's going to be over with. And it's not a good way to live our lives.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Galactic, featuring Jelly Joseph, Thursday, November 13th. New Orleans fusion funk, jazz, rock, and soul band Galactic is touring with their latest release, Audience with the Queen. This Galactic performance will also feature vocalist Angelica Jelly Joseph. Opening the show is the Lowdown Brass Band. More information about Galactic featuring Jelly Joseph is available at first-avenue.com.
We're talking with Dr. David Joseph. Simon this evening on Health Notes. His important book, Free to Love, Free to Heal. Heal your body by healing your emotions. We talk about love a lot. It seems that that's what human beings are looking for. But the thing that's really interesting to me is that I don't know that we have any clear definitions of love. And I was just wondering, how do you define love?
Love is that call from separation to unity. You know, so every one of us, now, since we are individuated, we are individuals, we have our own personalities, you know, which of course is wonderful. It's great that we all have our own I, me, mine, and our own desires and our own memories and our own choices. But inherent in our separation is the memory of unity. You know, whether or not you look at the world from a quantum physics perspective or a cosmological perspective that says that, you know, in the beginning, the entire universe was compressed into an infinitesimally small point of infinitesimal density, and then for reasons that only nature knows, the Big Bang occurred, and everything that we see now is form and phenomenon, although it has its own individuality, you know, is really the expression of that underlying unity. Or, you know, we just see it in our own lives, that deep within us, there's this call to connect. And love is what we call that, when love is that impulse that takes us from separation to unity. And, you know, regardless of where you are in your life, there's always that intrinsic impulse to move from individuation to unification. So, you know, when a 5-year-old says, I love my teddy bear, what they're saying is, through my connection to this inanimate object, I feel safer. I feel more whole. You know, when a 17-year-old gets a new car and says, I love my car, it's because through that connection, they feel more part of things. You know, and when you say, I love my partner, I love my job, it's the same thing. And so ultimately, love at every level of life is the wave of life that takes us from the pangs of separation to the bliss of unity. And so in every moment, on some level, there is this call to unity. You know, subatomic particles congregate as atoms because of love, and atoms form molecules because of love, and molecules form bodies because of love, and bodies form relationships and communities because of love. The moon keeps circulating around the earth because of love. So love is that unifying force that permeates everything in nature, everything in the universe, and really every cell in our body.
In chapter 9, you talk about the practice of love and apparently making love a way of life. It's pretty interesting on one hand, and I really appreciate the definition that you just gave of love. It's something that we long for so much. We acknowledge on one hand how powerful it is, and on another hand, we're afraid to really express it in fear of being hurt or seeming vulnerable. How do we go about the practice of love?
Well, first of all, we realize that everybody is thinking the way that you just said. So everybody wants to be loved, everyone wants to give love, and everyone is afraid to love. So, you know, somebody's got to step up to the plate. One of my favorite poets is Hafez, the great Sufi mystic from the 14th century. And he says, admit something. One of his poems says, admit something. Everyone you meet, you say, love me. Of course, you don't say this out loud, otherwise someone would call the cops. But consider this deep need in us to connect. So knowing this, why not you be the one with those full moon eyes saying in that sweet moon language what every other heart is longing to hear? So, you know, there's actually a practice to help people become more comfortable being loving. And that is, you start by just looking yourself in the mirror. So you literally make eye contact with yourself in the mirror, and while you're looking at yourself in the mirror, which is always kind of an interesting exercise anyways, because you can't help but, when you look at yourself in the mirror, thinking, who am I or who is this person? But independent of that, you make eye contact and you say to yourself, I am beneath no one. I am above no one, because I am the universe. And then the word in Sanskrit for that expression or experience is namaste. Namaste, probably people have heard. It's the expression that says the being in me recognizes the being in you and knows that it's the same being. So for a while, every time you walk by a mirror, you look yourself in the eye and you say, beneath no one, above no one, I am the universe, namaste. And then you start practicing that same exercise when you look into other people's eyes. So just very briefly, even if you just say namaste internally, silently, you're reminding yourself that you are the same being in disguise. And that very simple act of connecting, you know, having that heart-opened intention when you look into someone's eyes, starts the flow of love. And if you practice it, you'll see how it changes people very subconsciously. You know, if you go to a busy restaurant and you can see the wait person, you know, waiter or waitress are really stressed because everyone's yelling at them and demanding things. When they finally come to your table, you just look the waitress or waiter in the eye for 1 second and have the thought, namaste. Immediately, their body language will change. They'll take a breath. They'll stop looking stressed, because what's happening is, perhaps for the first time all evening or all day, someone is seeing them as a soul, as a being, rather than just as a servant. And something changes in us when we feel that level of connection. So that's a good starting point to be willing to go into that vulnerable space where love begins to flow. And the interesting thing about love is that it defies the usual laws of economics. You know, love and wisdom defy the usual laws of economics, because most things, if you give it away, you have less of it, until if you give it all away, you have none of it. But if you give your love away or you share your wisdom, you actually end up having more of it than when you started. And so just keep giving it away, and you'll see that nature loves a vacuum. You know, people say nature abhors a vacuum, but actually nature loves a vacuum. If you open up a space, nature will flow in there with love, creativity, abundance. So, you know, everyone's afraid to love. Just get over it.
So close, as you'll always be. such joy I never knew I'd find.
I will
celebrate the victory.
Dr. David Simon on Health Notes tonight. Free to love, free to heal. Heal your body by healing your emotions. Why the order free to love, free to heal? Usually one would think that, I don't know why we would, why, I mean, as I'm asking you the question, I'm thinking, well, of course it would make sense that if I'm loving, then I'll, if I'm free to love, then I can heal. And usually I think that we view it the other way around. If I can heal, then I can love. How do you see that distinction?
A similar reversal is people think, if I heal myself, then I'll be happy. You know, if I get rid of this headache, then I'll be happy. If I you know, can cure my irritable bowel syndrome, then I'll be happy. But we actually find that it's more important to go for what makes you happy, and then the healing occurs. That sense of well-being, that sense of joy, that sense of pleasure, that sense of ecstasy is amazingly healing. And so when people, you know, people come every week to the Chopra Center and participate in programs here with a whole range of illnesses and sufferings, and you know, they come thinking we're going to do something about their disease. We're going to do something about their cancer. We're going to do something about their ulcerative colitis. We're going to do something about their migraine headaches. But we really don't pay much attention to the disease when people are here. We give people the experience of joy. We help people through meditation, through yoga, through beautiful Ayurvedic treatments, through information, through interactive exercises, through dance, through movement, through artistic expression. We remind them of their capacity to create inner bliss, inner joy, inner ecstasy. And what they find is by focusing on happiness, their illness gets better. Their struggle gets less. And I think the same is true for love, is that if we think we have to be healthy in order to be able to love, well, we'll probably never be healthy and we'll never love. If we just say, what can I do today to expand love in my life? And you have your attention on that, most likely whatever the psychological or physical challenge that you're facing will become somewhat less. So, you know, love is that flow of energy that links the part to the whole. And almost all sickness is a result of that separation from wholeness. You know, a cancer cell is a cell that has taken on its own ego and doesn't care so much about how its choices influence its community. And so the way to cure cancer is to remind that cancer cell of its purpose in life, of its dharma, have it return its memory of wholeness, and then reestablish balance again. So, you know, one of my friends, Diane Connolly at Thai Sophia, wrote a book called All Sickness is Homesickness. And so the cure is to come back home. And of course, that doesn't mean the bricks and mortar of your structure. It means heart and soul of your being.
It's powerful. In your book, you have a lot of yoga positions, and you talk about movement. Where does movement fit into this conversation?
You know, the body is the subconscious mind. So whatever we're not aware of in some way or another, we store that memory in our bodies. And that's certainly true for the memories of painful experiences, which, you know, come from either not getting our needs met or having our boundaries violated without our permission. So we store that. And often when we're hurt, the natural protective mechanism is to contract or to constrict. So, you know, if you imagine someone being beaten on the ground, they will tend to curl up into a fetal position to try to protect themselves. And it is protective, but that constricted, contracted posture also locks in pain. And in order to mobilize and release that pain, we have to begin to release that constriction. And movement is a powerful way, you know, getting people to tune into their bodies, feel the feelings. You know, music is a powerful tool to bring us into the present moment. And we provide those opportunities through yoga, through Tai Chi, through dance, for people to get back in touch with their bodies. And what we find is that it's an amazing way to begin to activate the internal pharmacy, that inner pharmacy that can create the chemistry of well-being, that can create the chemistry that supports our immune function, that normalizes our digestive tract, that helps us get into a normal sleep-wake cycle. So, you know, anybody who's listening, if they're struggling with something, think for a moment, what's your favorite music? Put it on, close the shades, and just let yourself dance freely and ecstatically, and you'll see that something changes, something shifts, something reminds you that life is short and shouldn't be wasted in ruminating about the past or worrying about the future, that we should be perpetually exploring this present moment.
You also talk about writing the great love story, or writing a great love story. Can you say more about that?
You know, love is the greatest teacher that we can experience. And, you know, no drop of love is ever wasted. You know, our personal love is just concentrated divine love. And so if we have that intention that every day we're going to write a love story, in whatever form it unfolds, you know, it could be being loving to our children, to our partners, to our spouses, to people that we work with, to our parents, to the neighbor next door, to the waiter that's serving us. You know, just having that intention to let love flow. There's no greater teacher, you know. Patience is the disciple of love. Anyone who's in a loving relationship, you know, knows how important patience is. And so there's nothing else that can teach us about patience than as great as love. You know, unconditionality is the student of love. Unity is the student of love. So, you know, traditionally in the yoga tradition, there are four different pathways to unity. There's the path of knowledge, you know, Gyan Yoga. There's the path of action, Karma Yoga. There's the path of technology, Raja Yoga, and then there's the path of love, which is Bhakti Yoga. And it's not for everyone, but, you know, if you are willing to practice love as a spiritual technology, you will very quickly get enlightened, because love is all about seeing through the differences and recognizing the underlying unity. And that's really the essence of higher states of consciousness, of awakening.
Support for KFAI comes from the Landmark Center, presenting the 14th season of Landmark Live in the F.K. Weyerhaeuser Auditorium. Friday, November 14th, Landmark Live presents Kiss the Tiger. Twin Cities music scene mainstays Kiss the Tiger are back with their new album, Infinite Love. It's an album that highlights their growth as a band, explores new musical avenues, and showcases their flair for the theatrical. More information about Kiss the Tiger and all of the 2025 Landmark Live concerts can be found at landmarkcenter.org.
The top foods that can naturally balance hormones. And if you struggle with thyroid issues, adrenal fatigue, any form of hormone imbalance whatsoever, maybe impotence, low testosterone, estrogen dominance. These five foods are an absolute must to help you naturally balance your hormones. And I think some of these healthy fats might even surprise you. And so again, if you're going to naturally balance your hormones, here are the five fats you have to have. Number one, you've got to get healthy omega-9 fats. And omega-9 fats include avocados, almonds, and olive oil. We know avocados are also packed with potassium and fiber and other nutrients that can help balance hormones. But again, omega-9s are also known as monounsaturated fats, can help balance hormones. And you want to do one serving a day of those type of fats. And so one of the best, I really believe, is avocados. So doing about a half an avocado on a salad every day, or doing some homemade guacamole, a great way to naturally balance hormones. The second type of fat you want to add in your diet to balance hormones are short-chain fatty acids, and those are found in grass-fed dairy products like grass-fed butter, ghee, and then things like organic kefir and yogurt. Also, the probiotics there can also be beneficial, but short-chain fats are great for your gut, and they actually help your body in producing a fatty acid called L-butyrate, which actually is fuel for your gut, so it's great for balancing hormones. It even helps your body, actually, if your gut is healthy, from consuming these short-chain fats. It aids your body in producing a vitamin called vitamin K2 along with vitamin B12, which naturally support balanced hormones. The third fat you wanna add in to naturally balance your hormones are gonna be omega-3 fatty acids. And we know that omega-3s reduce inflammation. That's why they're beneficial in balancing hormones. So consuming wild-caught fish like salmon, also adding in chia seeds, flax seeds, and walnuts. These omega-3 fats are also excellent when it comes to naturally balancing out those hormone levels in your body. The next sort of fat you want to get in your body are medium-chain fatty acids that are found in coconut. The reason why coconut oil is so good for hormones is your body can burn coconut oil as energy. And so it helps stabilize blood sugar levels. And by the way, one of the biggest things that can cause your hormones to get imbalanced is consuming too much sugar and not getting the right type of fats for your body to burn as fuel. And that's why coconut oil, coconut milk, all coconut products are perfect for naturally balancing hormones. And last but not least, adding a sort of fatty acid in your diet, a type of omega-6 fat, and surprisingly, called GLA, that stands for gamma linoleic acid. And this sort of fatty acid is found in hemp seeds. It's also found in supplement form in evening primrose oil and borage oil. But hemp seeds contain a sort of fat that has been shown to naturally support progesterone levels in the body for men and women. And so adding hemp seeds in. And so a lot of these you can get in a superfood smoothie for breakfast. You could put in some coconut milk or coconut oil, a tablespoon of hemp seeds, a tablespoon of chia, and then even putting in an avocado there in the smoothie for breakfast. But load up on those five healthy fats if you want to naturally balance your hormones. How to overcome food cravings and sugar cravings naturally. And this is something that so many people struggle with. In fact, when I interviewed some of my patients and asked them, what makes you go off a diet or crash on a diet? Pretty much every one of them said, well, the biggest thing for me was I started craving sugar. And so this is something that is kind of a big roadblock for anybody who's trying to lose weight, burn fat, get fit, is you maybe can stick on it for a day or two or even a few weeks. And finally, the cravings for the sugar, or especially the carbohydrates like pastas and breads and grains and cookies, just overcomes people. And so in this video, I'm going to go through step by step the four steps you need to follow if you want to overcome sugar cravings naturally. And it really starts with diet. And the first thing you have to do is you have to start adding in foods that balance out blood sugar levels and help balance out insulin. Now, insulin is a hormone in your body that really works with your pancreas, that really helps out balance those blood sugar levels. And it's really the main issue that diabetics have is either they're not absorbing, or their insulin receptor sites aren't working properly, or their body's not producing enough insulin. But if you want to overcome these sugar cravings, you've got to work with insulin. And so you've got to keep your blood sugar levels stable. In order to do that, there are three things you must add into your diet and every single meal you eat. You need more healthy fat, protein, and fiber.
And those three things will help balance out those blood sugar levels. They'll actually help keep you full longer and help you overcome sugar cravings. Some of the best foods in terms of protein are going to be protein sources like organic grass-fed beef, wild chicken and turkey, free-range eggs, fermented dairy products, raw cheeses, eggs. But those are really going to help getting good quality protein, even organic protein powder like whey, grass-fed whey protein. But getting more protein in your diet is a great way to balance out those blood sugar levels to reduce sugar cravings. The next thing, healthy fats. Doing more nuts and seeds like sprouted chia and flax seeds are amazing. Almonds are a great source of fat. Coconut oil, avocados, ghee or clarified butter. So butter is great. So again, getting more healthy fat is crucial to balancing out those blood sugar levels. And last but not least, getting more fiber. Your best sources of fiber are going to be from vegetables, nuts and seeds, as well as berries. And so getting those in your diet. But remember, every meal you want to reduce sugar cravings, protein, healthy fat, and fiber. And so what this might look like for breakfast is you may do a superfood smoothie and add in a couple tablespoons of sprouted chia or flax meal to get all of that extra fiber and the protein there as well. A scoop of whey protein to increase your protein, and then some coconut milk or oil, you're getting those healthy fats. And if you can do those in a morning smoothie, that's going to help keep you fuller longer. Step number two, if you want to overcome sugar and food cravings, is you got to get the sugar and grains out of your diet. If you're over, it's kind of like a vicious cycle. The more sugar you eat, the more your body starts to crave it. And the first couple days are the hardest. And what I would encourage you to do is slowly wean yourself off the sugar and then find some healthy replacements that help satisfy the sweet craving. Adding some organic stevia powder or stevia leaf into your diet and doing that with tea. Doing some tea during the day with some stevia is a great thing to kind of help with that sort of sweet craving you might have. As I said earlier, doing the smoothie for breakfast, you can do some protein powder that's flavored can also help. But again, get the sugar and a lot of the grains and starches out. That's step number two. Step number three is taking the right supplements that will help balance out blood sugar levels. And specifically, there is a trace mineral called chromium, which is incredible, especially if you're a diabetic. But taking 200 micrograms of chromium picolinate three times a day can really help steady out your blood sugar levels. And so what you may consider doing is going online, finding a high-quality chromium supplement, and actually taking that with your meals three times a day can help balance out blood sugar levels, reduce sugar cravings. Also, B vitamins help. Taking a high-quality B-complex vitamin can help you overcome sugar cravings, especially vitamin B12, vitamin B6. So taking a B-complex vitamin. And those are really some of the top ones. And the third would be a probiotic supplement. Probiotic supplements help reduce sugar cravings because they help get rid of yeast in your system, and yeast and bad bacteria feed off of sugar. The probiotics are going to help keep that yeast balanced in the body. So again, the best supplements are going to be doing a high quality chromium supplement, a B complex supplement, and a probiotic supplement if you want to reduce those sugar cravings fast. Also getting a high quality fiber supplement, or just adding a few tablespoons of sprouted flax and chia into your diet are also fantastic. And last but not least, start doing the right type of exercise. Now, actually doing a lot of cardiovascular exercise will cause you to crave sugar versus doing weight training exercise or more isometric exercises like bar classes or yoga or Pilates can actually help stabilize blood sugar, and it won't cause you to crave as many carbohydrates. But ideally, you would do weight training or burst training, which is interval cardio, but stop doing long-distance cardio like running or triathlons or things like that. That actually will cause your body to start craving sugar. So doing some basic weight training, yoga, Pilates, or as I said, burst training, those actually help balance out blood sugar levels and keep you from having sugar cravings. Natural sweeteners and sugar substitutes. And so this is a big deal today. So many people are over-consuming high fructose corn syrup, processed sugar, and just carbs in general. And what I'm going to go over here are my top five natural sweeteners that many of them, not all of them, that many of them still have sugar, but it's much easier for your body to digest and process, and it's going to bring the most health benefits to your body. So whether you're looking for sugar substitutes for baking or cooking, or let's say just something to add in your morning tea or smoothie, these are going to be the best five natural sweeteners you can use. And to start with, I'm going to go over my number one natural sweetener, and that's pure raw honey. Now, when you're buying honey, you want it to say raw. You want it to ideally even be from a local source. And let me say this about honey. One of the reasons it's so beneficial is that honey is not just a sugar. It's actually a food. Honey doesn't just contain sugar. It also contains amino acids. It contains specific types of electrolytes and antioxidants and antimicrobial compounds that can really support your body and the health of your body. So pure raw honey. Now, again, you want to use it sparingly, as the proverbs say. You don't want to go overboard with using these sweeteners, but one tablespoon, 1 to 2 times daily, is a good healthy amount that most people can do well with. So again, pure raw honey. A few other benefits here of honey is it helps reduce allergy symptoms. And the reason it does that is local pollen, and this is if you buy local honey, it actually really helps with allergies because it helps your body adapt to local pollen. It's kind of natural immunizations over time, the truth of how we were supposed to adapt our surroundings. You have in bee pollen, which is found in pure raw honey. By the way, there was a study at Texas A&M University. They found that about 80% of honey on supermarket shelves don't contain any pollen whatsoever. That's why you've really got to buy the raw stuff if you want the real deal. Also, raw honey contains antimicrobial properties. So I don't just eat honey. I actually use honey when I get a cut or wound. I put it in the area. If you have acne or skin issues, you can put it right on the area. I used to use honey as I use it in morning with my sprouted soaked oatmeal sometimes. I'll put it in a breakfast smoothie. I'll use it when I'm making gluten-free pancakes. I'll use it with some green tea, just a little bit of honey in there to sweeten it up. But again, honey, probably my most used sweetener that I use here on a regular basis. The number two sweetener you should really consider using on a regular basis, and this is especially good if you have blood sugar issues, if you're overweight, or if you have something like diabetes, and that's stevia. And stevia is a no-calorie, all-natural sweetener that comes from a leaf of actually a flowering plant. And stevia, and there are many different types of stevia. Ideally, you get full green leaf stevia. Another form of stevia that's suitable is doing stevia that is basically just ground and part of it is extracted. Now, there are other brands out there today that I am not a fan of, like Truvia, because it's so highly processed. And they'll also add in other chemicals, and they come from GMO corn or add in GMO corn derivatives. And we all know we don't want GMOs in our diet. But Sweet Leaf, this is one of my favorite brands I use. This is stevia. In fact, they even have stevia flavors. This is you can get chocolate stevia, vanilla stevia, chocolate raspberry stevia, pumpkin spice stevia. So there's a lot of different brands. But the great thing about stevia is there's no sugar involved. And so if you do have diabetes or blood sugar issues or looking to lose weight fast, this is a great no carbohydrate solution. And again, just like using honey sparingly, you shouldn't be dumping this in your foods and going overboard. But just a little bit goes a long way. Just a few drops in your morning tea. I love this with my herbal teas in the morning. I add a little bit sometimes to something like a morning smoothie, a little bit to different baking goods. Or if I'm making homemade pudding, I'll put this in there with some chia seeds and coconut milk and coconut oil. But again, a little bit of stevia is great, especially if you've got blood sugar issues or weight loss issues. Try some stevia, my second favorite natural sweetener. My number three natural sweetener are dates. Now, dates, we could throw other fruits here into the category, things like raisins, apricots, other dried fruit, pineapple juices. But the great thing about dates are they're also very high in fiber and potassium, as well as other vitamin minerals. In fact, of all the sweeteners I'm going to go over, dates have the highest nutrient value. Now, in terms of phytochemicals that heal the body, honey is the highest. But in terms of actually vitamins and minerals, and fiber content, dates are the highest, and that fiber actually slows down sugar absorption. So remember, if we're comparing this to white sugar, high fructose corn syrup, dates are not sugar. Dates are a food that contains sugar, and this food also has fiber and antioxidants and minerals like potassium that helps you slowly absorb sugar
and really helps regulate sugar within your body. And so dates are very sweet. And you mix some dates with some nut butter, and you can make food bars at home. You can make protein bars. You can make pies. This is amazing to add with some pecans and cashews and make a homemade pie crust. And so in baking especially, I make a smoothie at home with some cashew butter and peaches, and you throw some dates in there. Dates are great actually just to throw in smoothies. And it's really great if you're into raw food and vegan foods. Dates are probably the number one natural sweetener used. And again, potassium is great for flushing out toxins. It's great for balancing electrolytes in the body. So this is great for athletes. And again, you don't want to go overboard. But again, dates, a fantastic sweetener. My number three favorite sweetener. Number four on my list is coconut sugar. You can see here we have organic coconut palm sugar. We actually have a vanilla flavor. It's unrefined, it's vegan, it's non-GMO. And especially when you're baking, if you're looking for an equal comparison, let's say you're baking a cake and you want a recipe that has the equal amounts of 1 cup of sugar to 1 cup of an alternative natural sweetener, well, here you go. Coconut sugar or coconut palm sugar here is the ideal replacement. We know coconut juice especially, which is where a lot of this comes from, the coconut juice is full of potassium. It's full of electrolytes and nutrients. So again, if you're looking for an equal comparison that's non-toxic, non-GMO, that your body's going to be able to digest better, organic coconut palm sugar is better. And all of these sweeteners, by the way, they're lower on the glycemic index, where regular table sugar scores 100. Many of these sweeteners score closer to a 50, so half the glycemic index, so it's going to affect your body in a lesser amount to where it's not going to cause your energy levels to drop or increase, spike your insulin levels, increasing your risk of diabetes like a lot of the other sugars out there today. So this is a great replacement, equal replacement to actual table sugar, especially in baking cookies and pies and things like that. And last, but not necessarily least, in terms of an a natural sweetener, is 100% pure organic maple syrup. And when you buy it, look for grade B or even a lower grade, even grade C. But you want a grade B maple syrup. This is USDA organic. And maple syrup, we know, is a fantastic sweetener. It's good, especially over things like pancakes and waffles. It's good in certain recipes where you want more of that sort of that earthy flavor along with it. And so again, 100% organic pure maple syrup, another good sweetener to add in. But what I would do is get rid of the sugar. By the way, if you just are using regular sugar in your baking and cooking, the majority of that sugar is genetically modified. It comes from genetically modified beets and GMO corn. And so if you just see sugar on a food label that you're buying, or you're using regular sugar in baking, we know that that is highly toxic to the body. And why not? It is so easy to replace those fake sugars with real sugar.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org. It's where community grows.
I mean, this is not the kind of music that comes from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
No.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis. Around the world, KFAI.org, the community's true voice. Hello, hello. Krista Wax, I am back with you for another 2 hours of Minnesota music. Yes, I am, every Monday, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. We're coming up on 8 years of MSP Sound. Can you believe that? That's so cool. Great show tonight.